coming at you live from WRAR Studios. We bring you The Defenders Live with our very own Miss Anna Edwards. Let's hear what Miss Anna has to say. So, Anna, take it away.
You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over.
And good afternoon, Richmond. You are listening to The Defenders Live, and I am your host, Anna Edwards, and today is Monday. The Defenders Live show is brought to you as a production of the Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality. And to learn more, visit defendersfje.org or defendersfje.blogspot.com. And to learn more about this show, please visit defendersliveradio.blogspot.com and click on Listen in order to listen to past shows. I'd love to hear from you, and the email address is defenderslivehost@gmail.com. That's defenderslivehost@gmail.com. Today's show is going to be an update on the situation in Mali in reference to a visit that the city of Richmond is currently experiencing by the mayor of Ségou. His name is Usman Simaga. He was elected in 2009, the same year that our Mayor Jones was elected, assumed office. And he has been a real leader in Ségou's coming alive, embracing its more recent role in craft trade and tourism, in particular during some of the formative and key years of the development of the festival on the Niger River, Festival sur le Niger, which has been a tremendous success for not just the city of Ségou, but for the region in terms of music festivals. It is now a major part of the international music festival scene, much as our Richmond Folk Festival has become as well. And so for the last several years, we've had the benefit of exchanges, people from here going to Mali, people from Mali coming to here, artist exchanges, musicians, educators, students, elected officials. And this particular mission is very much focused on the crisis in Mali. Mali has entered the world stage in terms of being a focal point for discussions on terrorism, on Al-Qaeda activity, on the destabilization of governments due to many factors. And in this case, Mali really was hit by a perfect storm of competing, colliding, and opportunistic factors. Such a surprise for people that it fell out in this way on the one hand. On the other hand, the more that we learn, the more people that we talk to, the more it becomes clear that certain aspects of this perfect storm have been in the making for a long time. You just don't always know when these things are going to finally spiral into a vortex and implode, and that's in essence what has happened. At the same time, I will say that Mayor Simaga has said that the long history of Mali's people is that it is a resilient and optimistic people, and that they expect that whatever destiny the gods may have had for Mali in terms of this particular chapter, that he is confident that they will overcome, and that things will be better than ever soon in the future. So on that sort of optimistic note of encouragement, at least from one who is on the ground experiencing it, we can try to take heart, at least to the extent that we can all calm down enough from the headlines to examine the information that's out there. About a month ago, which was still 2 months into both the rebellion in the north and the coup d'état over the central government in Bamako, The headlines were pretty remote, removed, distant. There wasn't that much that people felt compelled to pay attention to. But the minute somebody finally decided to write in a more pointed way about the gains of the factions that are aligned potentially with Al-Qaeda, and it's specifically Al-Qaeda in the Maghreb, and the acronym that you will hear is ACMI, A-Q-M-I. And this represents some of those who were involved in previous rebellions in the north that were fostered by some of the discontent and unmet needs of the Tuareg people who live in the north of Mali, but really represent a very small percentage of the population there. I've heard numbers that range from 2 to 5%. To as much as 10%. And I think the reference there may be that 10% is the overall Tuareg population in that part of Mali. The 2 to 5% may represent the numbers of people involved or actively involved in one way or another with the rebellion and the separation of the territories that is going on up there. Mayor Simaga will have a meeting with Mayor Jones here in Richmond. And this evening there will be a reception and a presentation on the situation at the Red Cross on Carey Street. It's 420 East Carey Street in downtown Richmond. The zip is 23220 if you're going to Google it for directions or whatever search engine you prefer or map service. And that will start at about 7 o'clock, where Mayor Simaga will give his presentation and talk about the situation in Mali. The particulars for his visit is that it is an outreach mission, and the intent is to bring from someone who is there face-to-face with us the information about this situation and how it is affecting Segu specifically. That would be the sort of point of departure for understanding the situation in Mali in his presentation. We'll focus on Segu because what this crisis has caused has been a refugee and internal displacement crisis. And the city of Segu, which is nominally, I would say, if you were to take the entire Segu region, which would be sort of equivalent to saying the greater Richmond area, you'd be looking at a similar population number to metropolitan Richmond, which is about 250,000. In the city proper, it's about 135,000. And they have experienced an influx of more than 7,000 people from the north, coming through and into Segu, essentially escaping the violence and deprivation and terrorizing of the population in the north. There's so much that is confused about, I think, for us who are so far removed to understanding about the dynamics of this situation. But sort of regardless of exactly who is at fault at what time, as usual, it is the people who are bearing the brunt of the violence, of the changes, and so as one faction in the north, which seems to have dominant control at this point, which is the Ansar Dine group, which is apparently allied with ACMI, which is the again Al Qaeda in the Maghreb formation, has taken sufficient control that they are implementing their ultimate goal, which was to impose Sharia law and to institute a formally Islamic state. It is a very specific kind of Islamic state, and so we don't want to generalize. And part of the presentation by the mayor will go to explaining the distinctions, and they are critically important distinctions. In terms of the original rebellion of the Tuareg, the MNLA, which was the National Movement for the Liberation of Azawad. Azawad is the name that they gave to the territory that went from the north of Mali down to encompass a part of the Niger River. And it's a very large territory. Some folks have said that it's approximately the size of France. And in that territory are three key cities, and they were Kidal, Gao, and Timbuktu. And of course, Timbuktu is the most renowned worldwide. You know, from our history books, from my childhood, Timbuktu I used to think was a mythical place, but it was in fact simply a legendary place in that it was renowned in the 12th and 13th centuries for being a center of learning for the world, and scholars from all over Europe, Asia, Africa would travel to Timbuktu for the learning that could be had there. Their libraries were tremendous. And it is, in fact, some of the treasures, not only the shrines of the 333 saints, but also the manuscripts that are apparently at risk, in part because the formation, the Islamist formation that is there, is not tolerant of interpretations of the Quran and other religious documents that come after the Prophet Muhammad made his prophecies, or, you know, and the Quran was produced. So it's very interesting, because in Islam there is always this tradition of study and learning and interpretation and and constant study, very much like I understand in the tradition of Judaism, and of course we have our own history with in terms of those who are Christian and Christian theology and the study of theology from within specific faiths. So the idea that there is now a force that has determined that this subsequent interpretations and study is not to be tolerated is a very interesting dynamic and worrisome. As we all know, we worry about our inability to question any information that is presented to us. And certainly if you're expected to live your life according to it, you want to have the ability to think about it and peruse on it. So in any event, it's frustrating to learn the various aspects of what is happening, and easy to want to settle on very specific responses to it. But it does behoove us to delve into it and try to understand the dynamics. For the people of Ségou, for the mainstream authorities of Ségou, their primary focus at this point is on providing for refugees. One of the things that they are doing is providing the documentation, and it's one of the ways in which they know the numbers. As people come in as refugees, or excuse me, really, refugees are for people outside the country who have to leave and seek refuge outside the country. Internally, they are known as the displaced. And so those who arrive in Ségou as displaced persons are registered and accounted for, and they try to get a good census count. We were provided with an initial handout. The date of which was July 20th was the most recent report that we have in our hand. The total number at that point was 7,238, and of that, 3,940 were children, school-aged, and children from age 0 to age 5. So that's, that's roughly half of the number of displaced people who are coming in, who are, weakened by, hunger and travel, by trauma, by specific violence. Women are, it is being reported that women are experiencing, rape and violations of, of family and person. And, they are coming in with great need, as is always the case when people are forcibly moved from where home is. And so they are coming into Ségou with great need. They are coming at a time when it is the rainy season, and supplies of all kinds, provisions of all kinds are, essentially very limited. They are getting some assistance from the central government, but, given the state of its affairs, that is very difficult to get, and they don't expect that it can be sustained for much longer than a month or two. And so these outreach trips and reaching out to partners and friends around the world for aid specifically to help the refugees and displaced persons is very high on the list of many localities in Mali. And so we are helping to spread the word. In that chart where we talk about how many people have come into Ségou between the time of the rebellion and June 20th, approximately the count here is that 4,072 were female, 3,166 male, and then as I indicated before, the number of children was 3,940. The breakout for that is 1,330 of them are school age children, which probably means under the age, over the age of 5, but under the age of 12. And then the number of children age 0 to 5 is 470. So basically infants and toddlers, 470. They are counting people with disabilities and the number of seniors, but at the point at which I have this chart, they don't have numbers in those categories yet. So what does it all mean? On the one hand, it means that we look to ourselves to try to understand what we would do in this circumstance. If you are interested in learning more, there is the possibility of attending the event at the Red Cross this evening. And otherwise, in your reading, as you are following the headlines, obviously be careful of those that tend to make big noise about all aspects of it. You have to be careful about being yanked around by headlines. And from the different directions of which the story is being told, again, it's probably most important for us to focus on two aspects. For me here on the show, and from the perspective of the Defenders Live program and the Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality, I'm going to be looking in the second half of the show to talking a little bit more about the political aspect of it. But the humanitarian piece is obviously very, very important and is the reason for Mayor Simaga's visit to Richmond at this time. And so just to give you a quick station break, you are listening to The Defenders Live here on WRIR. It's 97.3 LPFM. It's Richmond's radio for the rest of us. We come to you on Mondays from 12 to 12:30 and online, repeated on Tuesdays at 11 a.m. So you can listen live online at 12 on Mondays. You can listen on your radio at 12 on Mondays. And then on Tuesdays at 11 a.m., online only, you can stream this show live. And today we are talking about the situation in Mali. It's a West African nation of approximately 15 million people. It is surrounded by I think 6 or 7 West African nations, and they are Mauritania to the west, and Algeria to the north and east, and then Niger to the east and south a little bit, and Burkina Faso to the south, and Côte d'Ivoire. The Ivory Coast is also one of its southern neighboring nations, and then Senegal to the immediate west. And Senegal, of course, is on the coast and is the country that Gorée Island is a part of. And so for those of you who are familiar with the, as we have talked here about the stories of the transatlantic slave trade and points of departure all along the west coast of Africa are these ports. And one of them was on Gorée Island. And if you, in all your life, get the opportunity to travel, these are important places to visit in terms of the history of the United States, and in particular in terms of Africans in the New World, which is now, 400 years old, 400, 500 years old. So not so awfully new, although on the global scale, we're a blip, right? A dinky little blip on the map of humanity. So that's another perspective that it might be important to take in hand as well. If you look at a map of Mali, it's a a large, interestingly shaped. It's sort of the top half is shaped like a right triangle, and attached to a more fluidly shaped country below that is in some ways wrapped around the flow of the Niger River and the Niger Delta. They call it Niger in France or in French-speaking countries, and the name in Bamanan, which is the language of the Bambara people, who are the dominant population in most of the southern region of Mali, is Djoliba. Djoliba is the river. And things that are important to understand about Mali, you know, and I think I mentioned this before, that when they finally became independent in 1960, on September 22nd, one of the results of the French pulling out was that the much of the railroad system was pulled out as well. And Mali is, in essence, left with one major road that traverses the country and essentially follows the route of the Niger River. The river originates in Guinea, which is also one of the neighbors of Mali on the southwest side, and travels northeast through up through the country. The first significant city that you might be familiar with is Bamako. That's the capital city. And then if you drive three more hours to the northeast, you will pass through Ségou. If you continue on for another 4 hours, you will make it to Djéné, which is also a World Cultural Heritage Site and a religious city, really a remarkable place also. And then a little further north of that is Mopti. And Mopti was one of the most significant of the port cities of Mali throughout its history and continues to be so today. If you can you know, include Mopti in your travels on market day, it is quite remarkable for all the products that it has to offer for sale, and it is the lifeline. The Niger River is the trade lifeline for Mali, north, south, east, and west. There is a road system, but it's very difficult, and there is often times when you will literally be traveling on no roads in some of the farther regions, and in particular up north. Once you get up north, you are in the Sahel, you are in the Sahara. The Sahel I've always sort of understood as being sort of the boundary, the sort of wide swath of transition land between the sort of more delta and tropical regions of Africa through that then transition up to the Sahara and the actual, you know, full-blown desert area. And Mali occupy the northern half of Mali, you know, sits squarely in both sort of what I consider the Sahel, but then actually the full-blown Sahara. And that can help you understand how difficult it is to defend and maintain the integrity of the borders in this region, in particular the northern borders of Mauritania, Mali, Algeria, the southern borders of Algeria, and Algeria, Niger, and then Niger, Libya, and Algeria, Libya. These are pretty fluid and open borders, in fact, because equipment doesn't last very long. It's very difficult to keep people sustained in those regions if you're talking about armed forces or border patrols and things like that. So the integrity of the boundaries of these nations are fairly much in flux, and it's one of the reasons why the north of Mali has been a place that was chosen by both drug traffickers and those folks who, like the ACMI, who need places where they can move a little bit more freely. It's always been interesting to study the history of another country and to understand its history, especially if you can do it alongside your own country's history. It just gives you a better sense of how we occupy both our space and our cultural lives and our economic lives, as I'm coming to understand the term economy and economics, how we occupy the space that we do with each other and with the land, with our past and with our futures, And understanding what is happening in Mali helps to take us through all of the current geopolitical dynamics of the world. They involve oil, you know, which is our contemporary, you know, what they used to call the black gold of the, 20th century. And, you know, back in the day, it was gold. Gold was one of the primary movers of economies and militaries and power seekers throughout the world. Certainly one of the primary motives for European exploration in search of another route to trade with China. When the Ottoman Empire cut off its land route eastward. So they went west, and west meant the ocean. And when they hit the ocean, they then hit the this whole continent they didn't know was there, sparking life as we know it today. We will probably have more information for you going forward. And again, if you were interested in learning more about this situation, there is a program this evening at the Red Cross Building, 7 o'clock. The address is 420 East Carey Street. And you can contact us via email at VirginiaFriendsOfMali at gmail.com if you are interested in attending. I'm sorry, that is for the organization called the Virginia Friends of Mali, which is helping to facilitate Mayor Usman Simaga's visit today. So it's VirginiaFriendsOfMali at gmail.com for more information about tonight's program. The Down Home Family Reunion is coming up in August, and we will have guest Saad El Amin, who will talk about his recent lawsuit for those who are voter disenfranchised. And we will also look forward to having a guest who will talk to us about voter registration and in the coming national election, as well as our local and state elections. Thank you for tuning in to Defenders Live today. I look forward to talking to you again next week. Please remember to keep up the struggle. Please remember that kindness matters, and we will talk to you soon. Thanks.
You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over now.
You are listening to WRIRLP 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. Radio for the rest of us.